Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to today's episode of the Conversations Podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we're so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Thank you for listening today. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Wendy Gramza, President and CEO of the Toledo Regional Chamber of Commerce. During her more than 25 years as a chamber professional, she has also served as Vice President of Business Development Services and has held several other positions within the organization. Wendy holds the designation of Certified Chamber Executive from the Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives, and she is a graduate of the University of Toledo, holding a Bachelor of Business Administration degree in marketing. Hi, Wendy, and thank you for being our guest today. Wendy, welcome to the Conversations Podcast. I'm so excited that you're able to join us. And one of the ways that we start each of our podcasts is by asking our guests how they knew they needed education beyond high school.
Well, it's great to be here. I appreciate it. I do have a little bit of a unique story. Mm-hmm. And again, this is going back a few years, but I consider myself a non-traditional student. Mm-hmm. First one in my family to attend college. My father told me, you know, just get in with a big company and work your way up, which oddly enough I did, but mm-hmm. I knew that I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have some advanced education because I wanted to rise in the ranks and I knew that without an education that would only get me so far. But again, I started with the Chamber of Commerce. I was working for the golf tournament, the LPGA golf tournament, halfway through my senior year as part of a internship program. We didn't call them then back there then, right. But that's what it was. So I met a gentleman. He was the executive vice president of the Chamber of Commerce. And uh-huh. He said, okay, so you're graduating from high school. What are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go to college. And he said, great. What are you going to do? And I said, I have no idea. So he said, well, why don't you come and work for the Chamber? And you can go to school in the evenings and we'll be really flexible. I'm still at the Chamber of Commerce in Toledo.
Isn't that something?
It is. Yes, that was not my
just
plan.
Just 2 years ago.
Exactly, right. If you would have told me that 30-some years ago, that's how long it really was, I would have said, well, no, there's no way I'll still be there. But again, I wouldn't still be there without my education. And without an employer and I'm still friends with that person to this mm-hmm. day. He's since retired and doesn't live in the area anymore, but we are still in touch because he really is the one that kind of set me on that path. And don't know what I would have done. And it was really great seeing business happen and being able to apply what I was learning in the classroom right away in what was happening in my job. And I got a lot of the non-traditional professors who work during the day as well. Right. So I feel like I got a lot of real world information in the classroom. So that's kind of my story. How I got my degree at the University of Toledo. I have mm-hmm. a degree in marketing. Again, a successful career. Again, everybody defines that differently, right?
Right. But it's how you define it. That's important.
Right. And so mm-hmm. I define it as successful.
But it's that whole learn and earn umbrella.
Yes.
And, you know, I remember when I was in my master's program at Bowling Green, there was a lot of emphasis on that theory to practice and that you're able to learn some things on a more theoretical perspective. And then through what we had as assistantships, be able to apply them immediately in your working world. And it sounds like that was the experience that you had.
Yes. Yep. And I would see a lot of those professors, you know, on our chamber board or at a meeting. So it was just, yeah, it was a great experience for me. It wouldn't be everybody's best experience. Mm-hmm. It's not the experience that my children had, but that was the experience that worked for me. And I really feel like I made the most of it. And I right. think that's what everyone needs to do.
Right.
Make the most of the opportunities that are in front of them.
Right.
And then don't do a lot of second guessing. Just go with it.
Well, I think that's the other part is that you sit there and people stew over decisions. Like, is this the right one? Is this the right one? And here you had an opportunity and you got to tell your dad that you followed his advice to a T.
Right. Yes. I followed his advice and my own. It just sort of worked out that way.
That's awesome. So you mentioned you've been at the chamber for 30 some years. And, you know, I know that you absolutely love Northwest Ohio and you advocate for the region.
What makes this area so special to you? Because a lot of the advocacy that you do, some of it is very much internal to the region, about coordinating and listening to, you know, individual needs, things of that nature. But a big part also is, you know, our voice in Columbus and in D.C. and other parts of the state. And so tell me about what makes this region special to you.
Well, I think there are a lot of things, but I think what sums it up the best is it's that balance between size and amenities. So it's not a Columbus, it's not a Detroit, it's not a Chicago, but in a lot of ways, it can feel like it is. When you think about, you know, all of the amenities that we have that are world class, not just, you know, oh, we think they're great. Other people have told us they're great, right? So, you know, the parks, the art museum, the zoo, those are all world class amenities that we get to have here. And we can get to any of them in 15 or 20 minutes. And it's affordable. And although that's, you may talk about that later, that affordability is, you know, both a blessing and a curse in some ways. The bottom line is you can have a really good life here. And if you want to get involved in the community, it's much easier to do than it is in other places. And we really found that as we, at the Chamber, as we created EPIC, which is our young professionals organization, that we wanted to make sure that young people, you know, right away got integrated in the community if they were coming from somewhere else, if they were a recent grad, or if they were, you know, coming back home, whatever the case might be. And, you know, that's what people who came from other places says, wow, I can, you know, I can kind of be somebody and I can get involved and I can sit in a boardroom and my voice can be heard. I'd have to be 20 years down the road in my career in Chicago for that, for anybody to listen to me. So I think that's what's really special about this place as well, that if you want to, you don't sort of have to wait to pay your dues. You know, you can jump in and be part of the community on day one if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're right, everyone is very accessible, very friendly. People want to help. And so I do think that that sets us apart as a region versus a lot of other places in the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, did your straight from high school self understand what a chamber of commerce was and what it did?
Oh, that's a really good question. You might ask me, do I understand now what a chamber of commerce is? Do my kids understand what a chamber of commerce is? They think that I go to lunch for a living. Which is part of it, right? We know in business and what I do, there are a lot of lunches and dinners and breakfasts, and it's real hard to stick to a diet. But no, I did not. My parents were not in business. I even remember my first job at the golf tournament. My parents didn't golf. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what a leaderboard was. I didn't know anything about the game of golf. So that was really the first thing that I learned in that internship is about golf, right? And then, no, I did not know what a chamber of commerce did. But you learn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You learn quickly. And would you like me to explain that to the listeners?
Please?
Okay, I'm anticipating what you might want me to talk about that. So one of the misnomers is that we're part of government, and we are not. We are a private, not-for-profit organization, a C6, if anybody is interested in kind of the technicalities. So we're not a charitable organization, but we're a business organization. And we're made up of companies that join voluntarily.
Okay.
So 2,000 businesses decide that they're going to spend, you know, some of their budget every year to be part of the chamber. And what that means is a couple of different things. One, it means that they're going to have an opportunity to access one another. So in a lot of our events, you know, they're going to be able to learn best practices. They're going to be able to meet potential customers, potential vendors. They're going to be able to get involved in the issues that are important to our community, as we were talking about earlier. They're going to be able to be a leader in our community by being part of the chamber. And then they're going to get some things out of it, right? And businesses join the chamber for different reasons. Many of our small businesses join to get a return on investment, which they do. We have a health insurance program. We have a gas and electric discount program. We have workers' comp. So all of those sorts of things that we use our buying power to get our members, you know, a lot of times a better pricing, or sometimes a better product, or a more reliable product, more reliable pricing, those sorts of things as different industries kind of ebb and flow. And then, you know, they get a chance to, again, we have over 2,000 members. The other misnomer is that we only care about Toledo, or that we only care about the suburbs. And the answer to that is we care about both. And interestingly enough, 44% of our members are from the city of Toledo, and then 56 are outside the city of Toledo, but primarily Lucas, Wood, and Ottawa counties, a little bit of Fulton, and a lot of small businesses. About 80% of our members have 25 or fewer employees, so we have a lot of small businesses that join, but a lot of the middle market, and I think that's really a growing part of our membership and a growing part of our economy that we're working on. We're just launched a middle market accelerator that I'm extremely excited about because they have unique challenges. Small businesses have unique challenges, and we focused a lot on them. Large corporations, they want to get something done through the chamber, and all the large corporations are members and active. But that middle market, they don't necessarily need the health insurance or the other small business services. You know, they're not necessarily going to step into the role of, you know, the head of a major corporation, but they account for about a third of the country's GDP.
Wow.
So it's a really, really important market segment that has always been loyal to the chamber, and we're really looking forward to working with them in a more targeted way.
What is a middle market company?
So there's a number of different definitions for that, but we look at anyone with revenues from $20 million, I believe, to about $100 million. It's kind of like, what's a small business, right? The U.S. Small Business Administration says anyone with less than 500 employees is a small business. Well, I think if you've got 400 or 500 employees here in Toledo, people think you're a big company, right?
Exactly.
So it's sort of like, if you think you are, you are. But it's, again, just those companies that aren't starting out. They might be second generation. They might be owned by, you know, private equity, but, you know, they're larger. And that was the panel that we did at our recent annual meeting focused Polaris Logistics, which is kind of newly in the middle market. It's that company's not been in business a long time. And then we had Foundation Steel and Hyland. A lot of people know the Hyland name. And so they're considered to be in that middle market.
We know that you receive a commendation from the U.S. Chamber that we talk about world-class amenities and organizations in Toledo. And we believe that the Toledo Regional Chamber of Commerce is one of those. And so can you talk a little bit about the comparison between our chamber and what we might find in similarly sized cities?
Sure, absolutely. So the one thing we always say is, if you've seen one chamber, you've seen one chamber, because we all work on different things. There's a lot of commonalities, but really the thing that's important is, if you're in business or you're moving to a community, reach out to the Chamber of Commerce, because we're always, you know, working on the things that are important in a community, but that's different in different communities.
Mm-hmm.
But we are really pleased. Chambers of Commerce are all private, separate organizations. So we're not a chapter of the Ohio Chamber, but we're a member, and we work very closely with them.
Mm-hmm.
We work very closely with all of the metro chambers, because we're, you know, Toledo's a metropolitan city, so we work with Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Youngstown, Dayton, Akron. We all work together because we all have, you know, similar goals for the state and for our regions. And then we work very closely with the U.S. Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're a member like anyone else. We're not a chapter. None of our money goes there. We don't always agree with them on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was chosen, and I don't say that to sound boastful, because it's based on the organization that I represent, not necessarily me personally, but to be on their Committee of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pick 100 chamber executives out of 7,000. There are 7,000 chambers at last count, you know, that bear that name or might be operating under a different name, but they're basically the Chamber of Commerce. So that's pretty cool, and that's already been very helpful to me to be able to make sure that we're on the inside and that our voices are heard and I'm able to bring information back. And then we're an accredited chamber, and it's a self-examination within a group of our peers, and it does work through the U.S. Chamber. You can get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. We have 5 stars, and we've been able to maintain that. We'll be reaccredited next year, so knock on wood, but I won't. that we get reaccredited, and I'm sure we will. But, you know, just the reason that that's important is because, you know, when you stack us up against our peers, we really punch above our weight class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a smaller metro. More times than not, when I'm at my metro meetings, either with the state or across the other metros across the country, I'm sitting with, you know, Dallas and San Francisco and Oklahoma City and Chicago. And we're involved in all of the same projects.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the same services. We have sometimes better engagement than some of the really large cities in terms of the number of our members that participate and are really engaged. So, you know, we're right up there with the best of the best, and we're always looking at what are the big boys doing, right, that we're not, and how can we be doing it better. And it's a really close network of people. So I can call pretty much any city, call their chamber exec. I'm going to get through to them, and they're going to tell me, you know, maybe not what you see on the billboard or in the publication, but what really happened in their community, right, and how they, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I can get that from almost any city in the country. And that's pretty powerful. I do wish that we would utilize that a little bit more in our region. That we would, you know, lean in on our chamber to get that information, to get the real story about what's going on in other communities. But yeah, I'm super proud. We were accredited before I came to the organization. So it's been, you know, over 30 years. So I can't take credit for that. And we've just really leaned into those resources. The state chamber, the national chamber, our industry, we lean into that so that we can bring the absolute best of the best to bear for the members in the Toledo region.
That's fantastic. And your leadership is a big part of why you were chosen as one of the members of the Committee of 100. And so I hear you completely that it's about the whole organization, but it's also about you. So
thank
congratulations.
You. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, you mentioned the annual meeting, and Owens is a member, and I have the privilege of serving on the chamber board. And the annual meeting is truly an event that kind of embodies almost all the aspects, like when you talked about what a chamber does, you know, it's the partnership, collaboration, networking, whatever word works for you. And it's the, how is it that I can use this as a way to find benefit or ROI and things of that nature. And the advocacy and the learning and all of those things are kind of in that one space. And so I'm sure that Owens isn't the only organization that really gets a lot out of the annual meeting and enjoys attending. And I know you've talked about how the annual meeting has evolved over the years because you try and make sure that it's always responsive to your members'
right.
needs.
Well, every organization is required to have an annual meeting, and they can be super boring, right? So, and I've been to enough of them, right, over 30-some years that, you know, when I get bored, right, then I know it's time to shake it up. So, you know, we do what we can to make it a little bit different, but it really is our opportunity to tell our story. And so we don't ever want to gloss over that or forget that, because since we do so many things, and we didn't even talk about, you know, I think we're going to how we're engaged in workforce and advocacy and all the things that we do, and we do different things based on what the community needs. So the way we looked 5 years ago is not how we look today or how we're going to look 3 years from now. So because we're always trying to meet the needs of our business community, and those are changing, right? Like every day.
All the time.
So the annual meeting is an opportunity for us. It's a great networking opportunity, number one, but it's also a great opportunity for us to tell our story. So we try to do that in a way that's interesting.
Well, and it definitely was. It's a great event. And, you know, one of the great things about it is, you know, you sit at a table and you meet all sorts of folks from, you know, a variety of industries that you had no idea that they even existed in the region, and as well as the information that comes forward. One of the things that we got to do together recently was our partnership with Glass City Academy. And it was such an incredible event to have these young people come through. It was a partnership with Wood County Jobs and Family Services, Cherry Street Mission, ESC of Lake Erie West, the Chamber, and Owens. And these young people at Glass City Academy were able to earn a credential that kind of launches them. And I know that we've had conversations about how, you know, you look at workforce development, there's the large scale, you know, the things that are talked about on a very macro level. And then there is also the more targeted efforts that truly impact individuals, individual lives, their families and their communities. And so can you talk a little bit about how this partnership came together and what you found of value in it?
Absolutely. Well, I can't take any credit for the partnership coming together. That was the great staff that works at the chamber, Sarah Swisher, Jeff Schaff, and some others that are always out there looking for ways to coordinate. And we're always bringing that business voice, right? This is what businesses need. We're looking at it from the employer perspective, right? But it is so great when we get to work on the projects where we really get to focus on the individual employees and, like you said, the lives that we're affecting. We don't get to do that nearly enough. And I was just saying, I want to make sure that we get a bunch of our board members there next year for the graduation, because we don't realize that we are making an impact on individuals, and we don't really get to see that as much. And, you know, as we started the conversation, everybody's path is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So the Glass City students, you know, they have a different situation that they're in as, you know, coming out of high school. This gives them a leg up. This gives them an opportunity to get into the workforce immediately if that's what they want and or need to do. And it gives them some swagger to walk into an employer and be like, I have this credential, right? Like, you should hire me. They can walk in there, you know, bold as they want, because they have that credential that employers are looking for. And then the really important thing that we stress is, you know, not just in this particular program, but everything should be a career pathway, right? Even though I work at the same, you know, employer, I got my education as I went through that, and I got some certifications, and I moved up in the organization. So even if you stay at the same company, like my father told me to do, right, you can't just sit idle and go, okay, I'm here, I'm going to get promoted, I'm going to get paid more money. That's not how it worked for me. And I don't think that's how it works for anybody. So these folks know they're coming in with a credential. They can enroll in Owens, or they can do both. They can move on. They can get a four-year degree if they want to. They can get a master's degree, a PhD, whatever the case might be. And their path might be to stay with the company they start with, or it might not be. But they need to consider that they're on a pathway. We all need to think about life is a journey, right? Life is a pathway, and so is a career. So I love going to that event. And I was so pleased 2 years ago, the first time that I went, to see so many ladies graduating. I just thought that was really cool, because I think we still think about manufacturing and some of that hands-on stuff as being, you know, more for the guys. And I was really thrilled to see the young ladies and the families that came to support them.
So yep, awesome.
That was super cool.
And the students were relatively reserved. You know, like they weren't very demonstrative. They were very serious. But the families, their faces were just full of joy. And they have every right to be proud of their student.
Absolutely. And yeah, they looked serious. I took it as like they're ready for the next step, right?
Absolutely.
Like I said, they're going to have that swagger because they have credentials. They have know-how, and they know that they're going to be valuable to an employer. Mm-hmm. So, or they're going to be really ready to go back to Owens and to get into, you know, more into the technology and get an advanced degree. So
absolutely. Well, and I think that for them and having some opportunities at a pathway are hugely important. And you defined yourself as a non-traditional student, and a lot of our traditional age students have non-traditional lives, right? Mm-hmm. To where they're piecing together a variety mm-hmm. of responsibilities,
yep.
like work, like being a caregiver, and, you know, whatever other personas they may bring with them. And I think that those pathways are incredibly important. And it's striking me that there's kind of a pathway on an individual basis of what an individual does, but also on the business and industry side, that different businesses need pathways to either be able to access personnel or to kind of self-actualize into whatever that business needs to become in order to be viable in the future.
I mean, we're seeing that play out now, you know, more than ever. And the big question is AI, right? That's the question of the day, is how is that going to affect my business? And you can take two tactics on that, right? Like, oh no, how's it going to put me out of business? Or how am I going to use that to enhance my business? And so the chamber is going to be working a lot to help businesses think about how can it help improve my business. It's not necessarily going to eliminate people, but it will free people up to do the things that only people can do, right? Not things that can be done by AI. And that's the other thing that's happening, I think, too, with education. I've heard more people say, you just see in the last couple of months, I don't know what to tell my kid to go into.
Right.
Because everything will be replaced by AI. Right. That's the fear, right? Like, well, you can work your way through any industry and see where maybe they, you know, even a nurse might not, you know, but that's not the way that we should be looking at it. We should be looking at how do I make sure that whatever field I'm in, I know how to utilize AI to do mm-hmm. my job. If you don't do that, you might find yourself right on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. But if you embrace it and figure out how to use it to make yourself more valuable to an organization, those are the folks that are going to win.
Well, it's the same as the advice your dad gave you, right, in the career path you took. You saw the value in being with the chamber, and you had multiple opportunities because you invested in your education. And with AI, it's the same way. It's like if you start someplace and you figure out how you can continue to learn and to grow and to use these tools. I mean, the thing about any technology, a human has to develop it. A human has to repair it. I mean, all of those things happen because someone developed the skills and the knowledge and the ability to be able to do that. I remember, you know, I grew up in Detroit. My father, you know, said, you know, you need to go to school because all these factory jobs aren't going to look the same, right? Because, you know, you grew up in Detroit in the 70s and 80s, you go to the factory, you get a job, you retire in however many years. And so he's like, that's not the pathway that it used to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you think about advanced manufacturing and how the education and training it takes to do make the same cars or the same whatevers that it did before. They're still being made. It's just how they're being done is different. And that's because someone took the time and energy or had the skills or whatever it is to figure out a new way of getting it done.
And that's the thing. You want to be the people that can say, I can help figure out, you know, a new way, or I can really figure out how to maximize AI to help our company. So you have to embrace it, just like people that sat around and thought maybe the internet would go away, right? Or the computer, right? We're not all going to have a computer on our desk. No, we're going to have one in our hand, right?
Could you imagine being on the losing end of that wager?
Yeah. No, not be good. And like I said, I think AI is just sort of that next thing.
It's amazing because even though we've coined the phrase AI and it's a big buzzword, we've had it for years.
Yes.
You know, that autocorrect on your phone drives me bananas sometimes. But it's you know, it's part of what it is. So.
Right. And that's a good point. It thinks it knows what you want to say, but it doesn't. A human mm-hmm. knows that.
Exactly.
And so there will always be a place for us, right?
Always.
So I think, you know, if you have a passion to be a nurse, you have a passion to be an engineer, you should still pursue that, but make sure that AI is part of your journey and part of your educational experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are there other fields that you think or industries that are going to be important to Northwest Ohio in the near and long term?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of the things that are happening, you know, the data centers, those are great. We just need to manage the grid, and people don't realize, even AI, you don't realize when you go and you search something and you try to get AI versus doing it yourself, you are using energy. You're using electricity 10 times more than if you did something a different way. And so we just need to be prepared for that demand. So I think I think everybody's looking at that. Everybody's aware of that. I know our state legislature is aware of that. And that's a lot of the conversation now is, how do you balance the data centers with the grid? Because we all want to be able to turn our lights on and have our heat work and all of those good things. So
those things are important.
So we need to think about the fact that we're using a lot of electricity and a lot of energy, rather, when we're using AI and our phones and all of those other things. But we did a study in 19, a talent alignment strategy, to see, okay, we're hearing people saying, I can't find this, I can't find that, these types of workers. What does that really look like, right? Let's not be anecdotal about it. Let's use data. And so the data in 19 told us some very interesting things. That was, you know, still when we had a shortage of people in the medical field and we didn't have enough people in manufacturing. And they were just, you know, at one point it was like, give me a warm body, I'll train them. I just need somebody that's going to show up 5 days a week and, you know, pass a drug test. Well, that's not what we're hearing now, just, you know, 6 short years later. And so we haven't released this yet, but I am going to give you a little taste of it.
We get a sneak preview.
You get a sneak preview of how that's changed. One of the things that we're seeing is that we haven't come back from the post-pandemic employment. And we're seeing some industry clusters that are slowly losing jobs, some back office, some professional services. But then we see several smaller manufacturing clusters that are exceeding pre-pandemic employment levels. And those are electronics, energy, metalworking, industrial machining and materials, software and IT firms. So those are the areas that we're seeing from the data are growing more quickly. Our most visible cluster, automotive, grew significantly through the 2010s, but since 2019, it's declined about 5%. But again, all that's to say, that's just uncovering what you need to start looking at, thinking about, and digging in, right? That alone does not tell the story. So that's why I'm always a little fearful of throwing some of these things out without saying, well, what does that mean? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing, right? And a lot of times that depends on who you are, right? And what field you're in or what business you're in. But for sure, things are changing. You know, production employment at manufacturing has declined, but there's been a growth in, you know, logistics that has nearly, you know, offset those jobs. And again, you think about it in terms of logistics. I still don't understand how I order something from Amazon before I go to bed and I have it when I get home from work. I still don't understand how they do that, right? And I do think
it's
about
magic.
So sometimes. Well, it is, but I think about sometimes how much energy that takes, whether it's people's time and effort for the workers, the true energy of, you know, driving. I remember once an Amazon truck drove up. It was when during pandemic when they were using some private sector. So a guy drove up in a van and handed me the popsicle sticks that I ordered the night before. Did I need those popsicle sticks the next day? I think that's something we're going to have to wrestle with a little bit about, you know, or was there something more important that person could have been doing than delivering my popsicle sticks? But again, so we're seeing a lot of engineering and financial jobs, you know, are growing significantly. AI has not replaced accounting and finance, although people in that field can be fearful of that. And then education jobs, teaching administration are growing in our region. You know, the medical occupation demand has been flat. Well, what does that mean, right? Like, we shouldn't say, oh no, don't go into nursing because, you know, because if you talk to the hospitals, they're still looking for people, or the medical centers. So I would just caution people, you know, when this data comes out, you need to get minds together that are in those industries to sit down and really look at that data and come up with why it might be skewed, why it might be inaccurate, what story is it really telling? So that's at least what we're seeing in our preliminary report of what they're finding as they're comparing the numbers to 19. But again, we know how drastically things changed in 2020. So how are we sort of, you know, going through that? And I think 19's a good year to look at because 21, 22, it was just, yeah. I mean, look how, you know, unemployment absolutely skyrocketed. Well, did it really, right? It wasn't because of demand. It was because of, you know, the pandemic and things that were going on there. So just a lot, data's great, but there's a lot of things. It's the story behind the data that tells us how we need to react.
Oh, absolutely.
And be proactive about that.
Absolutely. Because even, you know, as you talk about healthcare, all of the hospitals still have a ton of openings, and there's multiple fields within that. And so, you know, all of us have had stories where, you know, you go and there's either a wait because a practitioner of one level or another has left or whatever it is. And, you know, we've been adding different programs because there's so much demand. And so, you know, to your point, a lot of times people think healthcare and they only think doctors and nurses, not realizing that there's still a demand for both and for sonographers and for, you know, imaging technicians and for, you know, all of the things. And even, you know, when you talk about automotive industry, it doesn't mean that there aren't jobs there. It just means that they may look different or how, you know, the volume compared to whatever. And unless you're looking at the raw numbers, to your point, do you really understand what the scope of that difference may be?
Right. Well, in manufacturing, I mean, they had so many openings, you know, pre-pandemic. So is it a bad thing that they don't have as many jobs available now, that the jobs aren't growing, and because they couldn't fill them? So they've figured out how to make it work with less people. And so that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Exactly.
So there's just, it's very complicated and complex at the same time.
But it does give a really good picture about where some growth may be. And as you talked about, a lot of the fields are, you know, like IT and computers and data centers and, you know, that manufacturing and healthcare and education are still strongholds for us in the region. I think that that's important, and it gives people solace who may have been interested in those pathways that they're still very valid pathways to consider. And so we've talked a lot about education and how it's kind of woven into our conversation so far. Higher education has always been in the workforce development business. You know, even the earliest institutions in the country were founded to provide religion to the people in the New World or whatever it is, or to, you know, for ministers, things of that nature. And so is there anything that we haven't covered about that link between education and economic development and workforce development?
I just think, and I think this is where we really have a leg up on other communities, because those three entities are all working together and we're all talking about that. And I think we really had to have this really tight labor market for business to step in and say, okay, hey, I need accountants, I need and I have plenty. When they didn't have plenty, then it was really, oh, maybe we need to come to the table, right? And so certainly I think business was last to come to the table, right? We know that. But I think that's really set us up with great partnerships and a great opportunity to make sure that we're all looking ahead and saying, hey, here's what we need. Because the ultimate goal, right, of education is employment for the most part. And so if we can keep talking about that, keep putting those programs together, and most importantly, too, after the education process, we need to keep them in the region, right? It's no secret that we're losing population in our region, and that we've got to figure that part out, whether it's educating people and keeping them here or bringing people in from outside, or we've got to reverse that trade imbalance, mm-hmm. if you will. And I think we have all the right people, you know, working on that and influencing that as much as we can. There's so many outside influences that influence that. But I think we're doing all the right things. And again, just making sure that we know what jobs are out there, making sure that we're talking to the colleges and universities to make sure that you know what we're looking for. I mean, if someone wants to be a marine biologist and they're going to be a marine biologist, and they're probably going to leave the area, right? Like, we don't want to say, no, you can't do that because we don't live near an ocean. We need to let people do and follow their passion, but we also need to expose students to the jobs that are available here. And so we're working on a number of interesting things about having some campus days where we combine the people that are getting ready to graduate with the high school students who are getting ready to start their educational process, and how can we bring those two groups together and not only sell them on the university and the pathway and the fact that they need more education, but how do we sell them on the region so that they don't forget about all the great things that we have to offer? So when it's time to look for a job, they look here first, right? They got to do what's best for them. They got to follow their dreams. Absolutely. We don't want anybody to feel like they can't get out if they want to. We just don't want them to want to.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
But you're right. If their heart calls them to be an oceanographer, then, you know, we kind of can't help them there.
Right. And we shouldn't. Yeah, we should encourage them to, you know, to follow that passion. But for those who don't know what they want to do, which is most people, let's expose them to the careers that are available in our region. Let's not forget about that. And I think that's where that economic development, business, and education all comes together. And I think we're further ahead in that partnership than a lot of people give us credit for.
Well, and you and I have talked about that before. I don't think people realize how connected a lot of the main organizations throughout the region are, and that there is some regular conversation. There is the efforts at aligning, and there are partnerships. I mean, you know, the Northwest Ohio Innovation Consortium is one. You know, you look at the strategic planning work that's happening between the Chamber and Regional Growth Partnership and Connect Toledo. I mean, TEMACOG is, you know, putting together a regional economic development plan. And so, can you talk a little bit about the synergies that you see developing and how important they are for us as a region?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the one thing that probably sometimes keeps us from fully embracing and maximizing those partnerships is we do have scarce resources here. We know that. We just do. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that we come up with that we want to do that we just don't necessarily have the resources to do. And I think that's why it's even more important that we think about how we can partner. So the partnering that we do with you all, we partnered with the Regional Growth Partnership on a project regarding talent and workforce that they wanted to do, but we were already doing, but we just needed a bit more resources to take it to that next level. Well, let's not reinvent the wheel. You know, in this case, the RGP, give the chamber the resources to take that to the next level, right? And I think things are more streamlined and they're more successful when we all feel like we have some skin in the game anyway. So even though resources might have pushed us together, I think we have a better outcome when we're all working together and all have a stake in what's going on. You know, our Port Authority is extremely important. That's another really important partner. They have all the financial tools to help make projects happen, help, you know, entrepreneurs start their businesses. So there's a lot going on. And I think that's a good thing and a bad thing because we don't take time to stop and articulate that, right, mm-hmm. to everybody about what we're doing. We're just busy doing it.
Right.
And I think we might need to, you know, spend a little bit more time really celebrating those partnerships. And that's one of the things we tried to do at the Chamber's annual meeting is really highlight those partnerships. If I look at how many organizations we work with on an annual basis and how many times we work with those individuals, it's thousands. I mean, we just couldn't do the work that we do all by ourselves. And so that scarcity of resources does make us more creative, right? More flexible, more nimble, and also makes us a little bit more collaborative. We just need to make sure that we don't let those scarce resources sort of pull us apart.
Right, right. Well, and it creates some efficiency too.
Yes.
You know, yep. as you think about some of the examples you mentioned of being able to come together and say, okay, now this is a shared project and we're able to do this together, then that helps everyone out.
Right. Because we all know what the issues are. We all know, you know, where we need to move forward. And so how can we all work together to do that, I think, is super important. And is it perfect? No, it's not. But, you know, lots of us wake up every day thinking about, you know, how we can do more with less, because that's the reality.
That is the reality. Now, a second ago, you mentioned entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship and the role that the Port Authority plays. But you've done a lot to support entrepreneurs in the region.
Absolutely. That has really been a passion of mine. Mm-hmm. One of my many positions at the chamber was the VP of small business. Mm-hmm. So that's always going to be near and dear to my heart. We have two programs that we operate, the Minority Business Assistance Center and the Small Business Development Center. You don't have to be a member to take advantage of those services, which some people say, that's weird. Well, no, it's not. We're growing potential members, right?
Right.
Even if we look at that selfishly, that's a good thing for the chamber to do. And we're actually one of the few chambers in the state and the country that really lean into that.
Okay.
Not quite sure why, but that's just kind of how it is. But we firmly believe in that. If we are not helping to grow the business community and the population of businesses in our region, which then grows the rest of our population, I'm not sure what we're doing. And that's always been my philosophy. So we're really excited about those programs that really help thousands of individuals that either want to start a business, or they're in a business and they want to grow it, or they want to transition it, or they want to figure out how to incorporate AI, or they want to figure out how to be more efficient. We've done a lot of work in that area. Back in 08, during the recession, we worked with about 100 existing businesses that said, hey, I just lost my best customer or my only customer, and I don't know if I can make payroll. And we couldn't help save all of them, but we at least, even if we couldn't, we helped them unwind in a way that made sense and found different pathways for people. So I think that's really important. We're expecting to see a little more with some of the layoffs that are happening a little more quietly across the country and in the region. We're expecting more people that probably should have always started a business, but they had a job, so they didn't, right? They didn't think of their pathway changing, mm-hmm. and now they have an opportunity to change that pathway. So we're gearing up to see more people at least exploring entrepreneurship in 2025 and 2026, because they may have that opportunity that might seem like, yeah, when you lose your job, that's not a good thing, but a lot of people will make lemonade, and entrepreneurship will be the lemonade that they make. And so we want to make sure that the chamber's there to help them as they take on that endeavor.
Now, that's really interesting, because it's like you're seeing some of the trends and you're able to forecast what some of the needs will be.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some of the other things that you think are going to be heavy needs for people in the next few years?
Well, a lot of the companies that we work with, starting childcare companies or businesses, and that's so important because that helps to foster employment, right? You can't get a job anywhere if you can't find someone to care for your children, or you can't afford it. So we're working a lot in that area. Again, you might say, oh, the chamber's interested in childcare. Why would that be? Because that keeps people from going to work. And so we're looking at, you know, businesses that are telling us people can't come to work because of these issues. So we see a lot of companies or a lot of people wanting to start childcare businesses. And so we support that. We work with a lot of companies in that area. Again, I just think, you know, help figuring out AI, figuring out how to access capital, figuring out, you know, what's the right balance of the workforce and where do we find the right people? You know, it's not all different. It's a lot of the same things. And then, you know, right now it's just the climate right now and tariffs and all of those things that are out there. The American entrepreneur can figure out their way around anything, but they have to know what they're trying to figure out their way around. And so it's always just the uncertainty that, you know, is really problematic for businesses and business owners and people that are starting businesses. So I think once that sort of sifts out, hopefully sooner rather than later, then people can say, okay, here's how this is going to affect my business, and here's how I'm going to turn it into an opportunity. That's what entrepreneurs do. So I have no fear that our regional economy isn't going to figure it out. We just need to figure out what it is we're figuring out. And the chamber will be there to help businesses of all sizes continue to figure that out.
So you developed a love of entrepreneurship when you were the senior vice president for small business. When you think back through all the roles that you've had at the chamber, what are some of the highlights? Like, what are the things that, you know, as you kind of look at your career there, the things that, you know, are some of your most cherished memories?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity back in 06 to lobby for our Air Guard base, the 180th.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, because we just finished the community air show, which mm-hmm. the chamber didn't lead by itself. It was a group of people that have come together for that, certainly. But that was really the highlight of my career. I didn't know anything about the military, you know, didn't even have family members who served in the military, and I just had to jump in and immerse myself. And I still to this day know more about those planes, and I sometimes refer to them as my planes. They're not, but that's just how deeply I had to jump into that. And I was so appreciative that the president of the chamber at the time put me in that position and said, go figure it out. And, you know, I'm here if you need me, but go figure it out. And we figured out how to do something that we hadn't done before. And we were very successful. That background, we actually got the Homeland Security mission and more planes. The other highlight was starting Epic Toledo, right? There was no roadmap for it. It was like, hey, this is, you know, something that we need to do. Go figure it out. So I like when I'm able to go figure stuff out. And, you know, as you get to the roles that we're in now, sometimes you don't get to do enough of that because you're involved in a lot of the policy and the paperwork and all of those sorts of things. So I love it when I'm able to figure out something new. And then, you know, to see things, BRAC was something, Base Realignment and Closure Process is what it was called. You know, that had to end. With EPIC, I'm seeing that continue, right? No longer in the age range, but seeing people that were in the age range that are now bank presidents and just seeing that evolution and knowing that we've helped to accelerate that. And people will tell you, yeah, being part of EPIC, I might have figured it out, found my way, but this was a place I could go and I was shown the way. And I got to, you know, decide what I made of that. And so a lot of people credit EPIC for helping them with that. So those are the projects that really, really excite me. And then now the other thing is just seeing people on my staff having that same experience and having those successes. That's because I know how that feels. Right. And so I love to see that in them, to see them grow and move into different areas. And the chamber is a place that if you're looking for instructions or a job that you're just going to do, go home and leave, is not the place for you. But if you want to create stuff and then 2 years from now be involved in something totally different and creating that, being at the chamber itself is, there's no degree for it, but it is an education every single day.
Wow.
I mean, you look at Sarah Swisher that started mm-hmm. Epic Toledo and now she's our workforce guru, right?
Absolutely.
She had to just figure it out and she did, and she's very well respected, not only here in our region, but at the state level.
Absolutely.
So the chamber gives people an opportunity to do that. And if I have just a little bit to do with that, that's really where I get my fix, if you will, is seeing other people have those opportunities and be successful.
That is fantastic. You have to have a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit yourself.
Yes. But I have found a way to feed that without all the risk and, you know, stress that all those entrepreneurs out there have. So it's cheating a little bit.
You don't want to go and start up a bunch of companies?
Maybe. Who knows? There's still time. But
still time.
It's not in the immediate future, no.
So just as you advocate and you support the people on your team, you've been noted as a fierce advocate for Toledo and for Northwest Ohio, and someone who really wants to build consensus and bring people together. As we're at an educational institution and our students' age range from teenager well into, you know, 60s and 70s, what advice would you give students who want to make a difference in their communities?
Don't wait to be invited, right? Find something that you're passionate about. Don't reinvent the wheel, though. Find another place that can fuel that, but you don't necessarily have to start something of your own. Again, we talked about scarce resources, right?
Right.
So, you know, find something that, and you might be able to get in there and change the way that they do things, right? If you see something, you're like, well, I wish they would do this or that. Well, don't sit back and complain about something. Jump in and be part of the solution. And that's really a great way to grow your network, right? I mean, you do that for the right reasons, but it's okay that you also get something out of it by leading in your community. You build a network that you never know how that's going to come back and benefit you or the other people in your network as you connect, you know, people that you think might know each other. I know you, but you might not know each other. That's how you can help people, you know, as well. So don't underestimate, as you're leading in your community, the fact that you're building a network, and that's just helpful to everyone. When we know each other, we can approach each other and we can get things done.
Absolutely. It makes it a lot easier,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Absolutely.
When I think about your career and everything that you've done, you've received multiple accolades along the way. But one of the things that I remember most, I've been on the chamber board for just a few months, and you had the honor of signing a bun at Tony Paco's. Tell me, first of all, was it truly a surprise when you walked in the room? And how does this kind of rate with all of the other acknowledgments that you've had throughout your career?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, a lot of the other things, you know, were maybe within my industry. They weren't mm-hmm. necessarily really local, right? And it means something in our industry, but doesn't, you know, mean something to everyone necessarily. This one was just fun, right? So, and it was a complete surprise. And darn that Brian Dickin, he's always surprising me. So he was the one that made that happen. Jimmy Harmon is just a great guy. He's mm-hmm. You know, on our board now, and we work with him on the Federal Reserve Bank Business Advisory Council. So he's just mm-hmm. a great individual, and I appreciate him, because most of the people that have signed bonds are way more famous and important than I am. So
more famous, more important, maybe not.
We'll see. But my family got a big kick out of it, obviously.
Good.
So it was a fun thing to do and continue to support such a great tradition in our community. Tony Paco's going back to MASH and all of those sorts of things. And the Pacos are still making really important things happen in our community. Tony Paco's now with Highland, you know, I think he just did a great job at the annual meeting of talking about and telling that room, hey, you're the leaders. You're the ones that, you know, you're the ones that are going to make things happen. So it's not them, it's us. I mean, I think we always need to be reminded of that. And I wasn't sure where my bond would be placed or necessarily where, you know, who I'd be with, because they don't, you know, always get your own plaque. So I am at the top of three bonds. I am above Ron DeSantis, Governor of Florida, and Senator Bernie Moreno.
There you go.
I am the top dog. So I thought that was a pretty interesting place to land, and it was just fun.
You're the top hot dog.
I am the top hot dog of those two folks. So they'll probably never know that, but we all know that that's the case.
You
so.
Know, this podcast has a really broad reach.
So maybe they'll hear it.
It's very possible.
Maybe they'll hear about it. Not sure, but yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for mentioning that.
No, it was, when you walked in, you looked absolutely surprised, but yeah, it was worth asking.
Yeah, I thought it was my retirement party. I was like, uh-oh, what do they all know that I don't, right? So I was scared for a minute. But then when I figured out what it was, I was really honored. So again, just thanks to Brian and the rest of the staff members that made that happen and really pulled mm-hmm. it off as a surprise. That was pretty interesting.
Well, to have that many people keep a secret, really, I mean, that's almost scary.
Yes, it is. I was going to say, yeah, I think there might be other things they do without my knowledge. But again, I trust them all, and it's in the best interest of the organization. So I don't worry about that.
Wonderful. Wendy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Conversations podcast. I really value the work that the Toledo Regional Chamber of Commerce does, not only, you know, for Owens and for workforce development, but in our community overall. And it's been a joy having you on the podcast and getting to know you a little better and the chamber as well.
I really appreciate it. And really, I would be remiss if I didn't thank you for participating on the board, because that's not something that you have to do. And I know that does take time away from the other things that you need to do in your day, but your voice is very important. And I appreciate, you know, the candor that you provide at those meetings. It's really important. If we don't speak up and we don't know what one another are thinking, then, you know, we're going to shortchange ourselves. So I appreciate you always willing to do that.
Thank you.
Appreciate your leadership as well.
Thank you. Wendy, thank you so much for being with us today. We're so grateful to you for your hard work on behalf of the city of Toledo and Northwest Ohio. Thank you for your support and your time. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to subscribe and join us for future conversations. Until next time, take care.